What's the first thing I want to do after we have a different president? Take a shower.
Impeachment is about cleansing the office.
Now, mind you, the heretofore document had dry ink on it for at least many fork nights
We signed it a long time ago.
It was a long time ago signed.
I thought you said the law was powerless.
Powerless to help you, not punish you.
Welcome to Opening Arguments, the podcast that pairs an inquisitive interviewer with a real-life lawyer. This podcast is sponsored by the law offices of P. Andrew Torres, LLC, for entertainment purposes, is not intended as legal advice, and does not form an attorney-client relationship. Don't take legal advice from a podcast.
Hello, and welcome to Opening Arguments. This is episode 326. I'm your host, Thomas Smith. That over there is Andrew Torres, your legal expert. And Andrew, how are you doing? And I just remembered that we all just heard a brand new intro that was so funny. I was laughing the whole time. I don't even remember what the new quotes were, because in this timeline, I haven't done it yet. But they were great, weren't they?
I have every confidence that they will be fantastic. I will give you my suggestions when we're done the record, which you never take. So we'll see how that goes.
I wouldn't say never.
Yeah, just I would say infrequently.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a lot of concerns going on. There's a lot of moving parts. There's
that's right. Know, no, it's some, I get it.
Sometimes they're too long. Sometimes they're not funny.
There you go.
Speaking of funny, though,
that's the new tagline for the show. Sometimes they're too long. Sometimes they're not funny.
Yeah, but credit where credit's due. Sometimes I try to punch up the titles of the episodes because, you know, they're dry. Not the case in this today's episode. That it was all Andrew, and the episode title is hilarious, and I want to give you a shout out because I audibly guffawed when I saw the title. So good stuff there. We've got to talk about when the skiff hit the fan. Oh man, what a bunch of clowns! What a bunch of absolute clowns! But anyway, we'll get to that. So what do we need to plug? Oh, you want to plug the 324 transcript.
Yeah, our amazing transcriptionist, Heather Loveridge, put together, if you haven't seen the regular transcripts of the episodes at openargs.com, you should. They're a great way to share the show with folks who maybe don't listen to podcasts or, you know, whatever. The work Heather did on 324, that was your guide to the nine crimes explicitly laid out in the Mueller report, is amazing. And what she did was, instead of transcribing where I'm reading from the report, she has actual screenshots from the Mueller report embedded into the article. And you know, folks on our Facebook group, in the Facebook community, Ashley Beasley, I think in particular, have you know, had some success talking to their Aunt Kathy's and Uncle Frank's and, you know, kind of putting the evidence out in front of them. So, you know, look, we wanted to make this a tool to help you talk to the folks in your life who, you know, maybe are still not sold on the whole impeachment thing. And, you know, this feels like it's a good tool. So I was really, really excited. And I wanted to give a special shout out to Heather, who did an amazing job on that. So,
absolutely. So check out the transcript. Heather is amazing. Totally echo that shout out. She's awesome. The transcripts are great. I also want to, echo your shout out to Ashley. You know, I was just thinking, a lot of it feels so futile when you talk about the Uncle Franks and the Aunt Kathy's, the trademark Uncle Frank and Aunt Kathy references that we do. But, you know, even if you're not convincing someone in the moment, because that never happens, like that really never does. Like almost never is somebody going to be like, well, I was wrong about everything that I've been saying and not only saying, but like been delivering in a really condescending, insulting way, I'll just turn on a dime and say I was wrong when I did all that. That never happens. But you never know, like, what the little thing is that kind of chips someone just enough on the way to ultimately changing their view sometime down the road. So even if, you know, let's be real, nothing's going to be the Matlock, you know, moment of of like, we're going to show the Trump supporters.
I confess,
this.
I did it yeah. all.
Oh, yeah. In memoriam, that quote that is no longer going to be on the opening. Yes, I did it. Yeah, I mean, it's not going to be that, but you never know. Like, it could be one of the straws on that camel.
Yeah.
So
I think that's right.
That's great.
Yeah, it and part of to me where I've had I want to echo what you've said 100%. Right, it's a long game and it's a tough conversation to have. What I try and do in any one conversation, you know, with somebody who's on the other side, is point out that their sources are not just accidentally wrong, right? That when you yeah. are relying on propaganda by people who have an agenda to protect the president, they do things like delete the word not in the middle of a sentence. And, you know, it's hard, right? We've talked about this when you have an alternative view of the universe. Sometimes kind of bringing that cognitive dissonance into focus does, I think, you know, the way you put it, right? Like, can leave a little bit of a stone in someone's shoe to be like, yeah, yeah. You know, the last time I used this sword, you know, the last time I sent somebody over to the Daily Caller, like, I sure look like a goddamn idiot as a result of that. Maybe I won't do that anymore. So, you know.
Yeah, I really wonder what the strict constitutionalists have to say when they're, you know, remember how up in arms everybody would get over Obama because all the conservatives thought he's just burning, ripping up the Constitution. And then you have Trump who literally says, oh, your phony emoluments clause. Right. Like just doesn't even acknowledge it. Like says a whole section of the Constitution or a whole clause rather is just wrong because he says so. It's not real. Yeah. Fake news. Fake Constitution. Good times.
Yeah,
all right. Well, I also want to give a quick shout out over to SIO, Serious Inquiries Only podcast. Jamie and I covered Tulsi Gabbard because we both, for so long, have just wondered WTF is with Tulsi Gabbard. Like, genuinely unsure. And we did a little bit of a deep dive on that. You know, tried to look at every source we could to see how best we could come up with what her deal is. Like, literally, what is her deal? I don't know if anyone can know for sure, but yeah, we talked a lot about it, and I hope people enjoy it. Go check out the Tulsi Gabbard episode
with
new outro music and credits, by the way.
I like that. And one more thank you before we get into the main segment. Lots of folks know I'm traveling, and this week's episode would not have happened on my end without some really timely research by friend of the show, Morgan Stringer, who put together a bunch of stuff for me. So, Morgan, thank you.
That's awesome. Yeah. And I wasn't going to mention it because I didn't know if you wanted to pull off the illusion that you were right there in wherever you live, Maryland. but okay. Now that the cat's out of the bag, Andrew's been sipping delicious wines and Prosecco over. And yeah, no, I'm not going to get into it. But I wish I was there, and the pictures are amazing. But it's okay. It's okay. We're doing the show. Let's do the show.
Let's do the show. The show always comes first.
Let's talk about this. Yep. Let's talk about the skiff hitting the fan. Here we go.
All right.
Because people have got to know whether or not their president's a crook.
So you're not aware of any context during the course of the election?
How many times do I have to answer this question?
Can you just say
Russia, to a large extent, it's corrupt and it's fake. Ask the president of Finland a question, please.
Okay, we are. Are we just yodeling? Is that all we're doing? Just constant yodel?
Yeah, the show, maybe the new intro will just be a minute of four different, you know, yodel super mixes. Because at least
combined
our Friday
with different
shows,
clown noises,
yeah, right.
And like the sound of Matt Gaetz walking in his clown shoes, and like,
God.
And just.
Yeah, he is the worst. No, so look, Everybody knows the incident. Matt Gaetz led a troop of clowns to break into an actual literal clowns.
Yeah.
Not just clown
to be taken
horns.
Seriously, yeah. Is what they
right,
say.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Straight out of the Ministry of Silly Walks, right? Like into a skiff, which is a sensitive, compartmentalized information facility where they disrupted the deposition of Laura Cooper, the Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense. You know all of that. We're going to break down what potential crimes were committed in doing so. And we're going to talk about what, you know, why
all
this
the consequences
goes,
they aren't going to face for it. I
well,
can't wait.
You know,
we'll see. Well, maybe I'll be wrong.
Maybe you'll be wrong. Okay. I think it's worth starting out. This is, you know, we retweeted this out from the OA Twitter account. It's a theme.
Well,
that
here,
we have
let me ask you the question that I think even a bunch of liberals like you and I might wonder about, which is, all right, Andrew, the Democrats are doing all these hearings and they seem to be behind closed doors. We don't know what's going on. It seems a little like it could be a little shady. You know, if I'm making the other side's argument here, don't you usually get to see the accusations against you? And also, just to my layperson memory, I remember from learning about it, the Watergate hearings seemed to be public, a lot of them at least. And, you know, there's public testimony in the Clinton impeachment. So what's going on? Are the Democrats doing something untoward here? They're being too cagey. What's the story there?
Yeah, I like that sort of steel manning of the other side. So, look, I want to begin with the idea. I doubt this will last because all pro-Trump arguments are ad hoc arguments. Look, if we can have a robust debate in this country about what due process means, right, I'm all in favor of that, right? And if all of a sudden Republicans have started discovering that, you know, their new best friend is due process of law, you know, maybe yeah. we can, and like I said, don't get your hopes up. But I kind of want to begin by bracketing this, by noting that process arguments in our nation's history, like while process is important, have always given way to substantive concerns, right? And the easiest way to think about that is to think about the exclusionary rule, right? Like, we agree it's super bad when, most of us agree, it's really, really bad when cops violate your rights. And so in the 1960s, the Supreme Court created a remedy for that process, which was the exclusionary rule. If the cops violate your rights in obtaining a piece of evidence, then the old rule used to be they got to use the evidence as much as they wanted and you could sue them afterwards, right?
Right.
And it's not hard to realize that's not much of a vindication of your rights, right?
Yeah, even it's like the judge is going to frown at him really hard while right. the judge still convicts you of whatever it was because the evidence was acquired right. unlawfully.
And then you're a convicted felon trying to sue right. the police, right?
Yeah.
And leave aside that reduces your likelihood of success. It also, and this is where it ties together, that doesn't vindicate your right of due process, right? That gives no incentive for the police to respect those rights. And so in an effort to proactively say, hey, look, like we think that this has value, the Supreme Court said that's not going to be sufficient to just compensate you afterwards. Some things are non-compensatory, right? Like when the police beat you up and rifle through your stuff without a search warrant, that's irreparable harm, right? And so we want to stop that in advance. So they created the exclusionary rule. Almost immediately, they gutted the exclusionary rule, right? And and they did because of this fundamental tension between process and substance, right? And so the two major exceptions to the exclusionary rule are the good faith exception, right? And that literally means what it sounds like, right? Like, if the cops violate your rights, but they do so thinking that they were doing okay, right? They didn't really mean to, then there's no harm, no foul. I mean, except to you. and the evidence comes in. And so that's one side of the equation. There is also the side of the equation. The second major exception is the inevitable discovery rule. And that is what it sounds like.
Right.
In other words, the cops come in.
If they were going to find it anyway or something.
We were going to find it anyway, right? And you can create a tortured...
if I remember right, that's the... Is that the one that's really gotten pretty loosey-goosey? Because you can just argue, well, we would have found that it's really easy to come up with hypotheticals of why you would have found something anyway.
Yeah, and this actually goes back to, we did the episode on Alan Dershowitz in the 1990s, was very, very concerned with what with the neologism that he coined of testa-lying, right? Which was police officers being coached to give testimony that everybody in the room knows is a lie, and a major chunk of that actually plays into this inevitable discovery rule, right? So police would come in and testify like, well, you know, I could definitely, you know, smell the aroma of marijuana on the person, right? And it was like you could smell it inside the sealed Ziploc bag at the bottom of their, you know, sock drawer. Like, no, you couldn't, right? Like, and we all know this, right? And everybody sort of would wink and nod, and you would then use that lying testimony to say, so, okay, so even though, you know, we didn't have a warrant to search his sock drawer, we would have gotten one because, you know, the cop definitely smelled, you know, the scent of pot on his socks, right? That's a real life example, right? So take that. The reason I sort of wanted to bracket with all of that is, let's be careful, right? Particularly if you're talking to, you know, Uncle Frank, Aunt Kathy. This is the impeachment process. The end consequences of the impeachment process are almost certainly at the very worst that Donald Trump will be removed from office, right? He will then be eligible to be criminally prosecuted. But there's no, right, we know that what will happen is President Pence will pardon Donald Trump, right? Donald Trump is not going to prison. So the first thing to remember is let's not shed too many tears for violations of process that are the ultimate consequence of impeachment is way less significant than process for an ordinary criminal.
Yeah, you don't get
defendant.
To be the king of the country anymore.
Correct.
It's like the most privilege there could be.
All of that is background to the actual answer, which is, and by the way, Donald Trump is getting way more process right now than any criminal defendant ever would, right? Because where we are is in the investigatory phase. Now, you may recall the investigatory phase for both Nixon and Clinton was handled by the special counsel's office. And all of that stuff was private, was handled by grand juries, and was not made public to anybody, let alone the opposing sides, until after the report was delivered, right? Here, we don't have a special counsel. Here we have the investigation is being conducted by three separate House committees. And on those committees are a total of 47 Republicans, right? 16 on the Intelligence Committee that we're going to talk about with respect to the skiff that was invaded. So this is not a cabal of Democrats meeting in secret and keeping out everybody who's a Republican. But even if it were, that would be consistent with the way grand juries work and the way in which the Clinton impeachment inquiry was carried out.
Yeah, you know, that makes me wonder why isn't there a special investigation about this? You know, I get, is it just strategic? Because strategically I get it, but Is there, you know, like, is that the only answer?
No, the answer is because the independent counsel law had a sunset provision in it and was allowed to lapse after the Clinton impeachment and was allowed to lapse.
We had a special investigation for the Mueller stuff. Like,
we did.
I mean, why didn't, so when this Ukraine stuff happened, why wasn't the instant answer, well, Mueller, put those lawyer socks back on. Sorry, I know, or somebody, you know. Whoever it would be, and you know, it'd be nice if it was a Democrat instead of a Republican. Why wasn't that the response?
Because, so two answers. Let me give you the worst one first, which is because the independent counsel statute has been allowed to expire, there is no congressional provision to appoint a special counsel. The way in which Mueller got appointed was because the attorney general recused himself, and then the acting attorney general, the assistant attorney general acting as the attorney general in connection with the Russia investigation, Rod Rosenstein, said, okay, I'm not going to do this myself, but pursuant to the appropriate sections of the U.S. Code, I am authorized to hire outside counsel to help the Department of Justice in its investigation. And that's who Mueller reported to, right? That's who authorized Mueller. That's who paid his salary. That was all internal to the Department of Justice. There is no chance that Bill Barr would do anything, right? So Congress can't make Bill Barr do anything. That's the difference between the independent counsel statute and being a special counsel, which is what Bob Mueller was. But let me give you then the second answer, which is even if there were, I think given the timing that Democrats would look at it and go, we can't. Right, it was great, and Bob Mueller was super thorough, and you know, blah blah blah. And, you know, leave aside ultimately how it was packaged to us, which I think, you know. We don't need to opine anymore on that. I think Democrats would look at it and go, yeah, it. We can't have a 2-year closed investigation, even if that was available, right? Like, that's why the scope of the latest impeachment inquiry really has been narrowed down, because that way you can get through and tell a compelling story in a limited and focused way. So, even if Bill Barr wasn't a corrupt hack, I don't think it would go that route.
Yeah. Okay. Makes sense.
All right. So what was happening here with the skiff? The House Intelligence Committee was deposing Laura Cooper, who is the Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense, and she was being deposed inside a skiff, a sensitive compartmentalized information facility. Why? We don't know. That's why it was inside a skiff, right? This is the Intelligence Committee, and the reason that you employ a skiff is to make sure that there's zero chance, or as close to zero chance as possible, that a hostile foreign power is able to intercept the most sensitive intelligence matters.
Okay. I see. And so clearly this was just Democrats in the skiff, right? Because the Republicans were outside like, hey, what's going on in there? There's only Democrats in the skiff, right?
No, 16 Republicans in there, right? And again, remember, right, the minority members of the House Intelligence Committee. This is a really good, I'm glad you raise it. Only the ranking members, only the majority members, only Democrats on the Intelligence Committee can issue subpoenas, right? And can start the investigatory process. This is why when we talked about the results of the 2018 midterm elections, and, you know, there was sort of that brief wave of disappointment when, you know, Beto O'Rourke failed to knock off Ted Cruz, and then we realized the Republicans were going to gain seats in the Senate, and folks were saying, well, maybe this isn't a blue wave. Maybe it's not as big a deal. And you and I went on the air and said, look, it's a big deal. And the reason that it's a big deal, is because.
And you were absolutely right about that.
Well, I've been wrong about a lot. The impeachment of Bill Barr is still, I guess. Yeah.
No, that's your worst one. But
that's my worst one. So there is a difference between being a Democrat on the committee, you get to issue the subpoenas, and being a Republican, you don't. That's why it was really, really important for us to retake the House of Representatives. And by the way, that was an issue in the 2018 midterms, right? Democrats ran on that. They said, if we take back control of the House, we're going to investigate Donald Trump. And by and large, the public was like, well, that's a good thing, because it sure seems like he's committed a lot of crimes, right? So
I think that was incredibly important.
Yeah.
Unbelievably important. The counterfactual in which we didn't win at least the House back in 2018 is, I think, a nightmare. It wouldn't even be.
It is.
Have nothing.
Yes, and, that is correct.
And also, this is the reason why we got years and years of Benghazi hearings forever.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Exactly right. And look, like, so the check on, so it's all of this, I love you bringing up the Benghazi, right? It because the check on House investigatory oversight gone awry is the political process. Representatives are reelected every 2 years. They're running all the time, right? And if the public generally perceives that a partisan House has gone too far in exercising its powers, the public starts voting those people out. So when you talk about process, that's the first check is the political system. The second is that while the ability to direct the investigation is still under the control of the majority party, the minority members are there, right?
Yeah.
You still serve on the committee.
This is not the No Homers Club from The Simpsons, right, where they're only Democrats in there. Nobody else.
We get one.
Yeah, there's like one Matt Gaetz in there, and they're like, sorry, we mean no Matt Gaetz is the thing. Right. Matt Gaetz is standing outside. Like, oh.
I would pay any amount of money for the House of Representatives to start a no Matt Gaetz club. Anyway, so a tiny bit more on SCIFs, just from a technological standpoint, I'm going to link. There is a 174-page technical manual.
Nice.
Put out by the Director of National Intelligence. I skimmed it. I will be honest with you. I did not read all 174 pages.
Is this how I should build my recording studio as a skip just for fun?
You should. So, and then I'm going to include, I'm going to include an article from Wired magazine. Again, not a political magazine, but that really breaks down what those technical specifications are meant to do, right? So the room has to be RF shielded, radio frequency shielded. That prevents stuff from going in and out, you know, radio signals from going in and out. The way in which you do that is by putting a ton of metal in the wall, right? The walls are then stuffed with sound attenuation material. That sounds like stuff you've got in your studio, and topped off with an acoustic sealant. That sounds
nice,
kind of delightful. Yeah.
That's so, why I need, I wish I had like a separate little, some people have that for their studio, separate little, like, you know, what is the word I'm looking for? I don't know, just a detached little room or whatever. I would do all this just for fun. It'd be fun. It'd be amazing.
No,
Gaetzes are going to interrupt my recordings.
And if you did, right? If you did create something akin to a SCIF, it is, I want you to think about like the airlocks in 2001, right? Like it is information. No, seriously, they use to bring in outside information into the SCIF, right? Or from one SCIF to another. Like they put it in a special bag, right? Everything, because that is the exception to the general rule.
Did they have to
rule.
Put whoever was testifying in a bag and then like,
yeah.
just toss it in the middle of the skiff? All right, come out. Okay. Let's hear your testimony.
So here's the thing. Everything that gets said or played or done in the skiff stays locked inside the skiff unless there's a special dispensation, right? And that's because, right, it wouldn't make any sense. I mean, think about it, right? This is like having a three-layer encrypted password and then, you know, it's written on a post-it stuck on your monitor, right? That doesn't do you any good, right? And so if you go inside the SCIF and you get all the super sensitive information, and we know, here's the big thing from a technological perspective, we know that hostile foreign powers are trying to eavesdrop on the skiffs, right?
Matt Gaetz.
They stick out. And so they're trying to hack that information. So if you could just like come out with a, you know, piece of paper in your binder that summarize, well, that would defeat the whole purpose in the first place. Mm-hmm. Right. So, I just want to emphasize there's 174 pages describing how you have to build this thing. The most famous skiff, right, is the Situation Room in the White House. Barack Obama apparently had a little tent that you could like set up a portable skiff.
When they're traveling, I've heard a lot about that.
Yep.
Yeah, like if you're in a hotel room, the president's staff, you know, they have to set up this like, I don't even know what it, for some reason it made me think of E.T., you know, when they have the
yes, yeah, the, like, right,
yeah, plastic everywhere.
Exactly right. And so there's one at Mar-a-Lago because Donald Trump's always at Mar-a-Lago. This is an ordinary and normal part of how you secure your most sensitive information from hostile foreign powers that are trying to eavesdrop on that most sensitive information. And what happened was America's dumbest congressman, Matt Gaetz, and there's a lot of competition for that spot.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Did he win that? Okay.
Yeah.
Good for him. Tough.
Barged in with a coterie of idiots behind him, carrying cell phones. One of them tried to live tweet out the proceedings from inside the skiff. A cell phone is the very, very worst thing you can bring inside a secure area, right? Because cell phones can have malware on them, right? Can have Trojan horses, and can easily, right? I just want you to think about, go back to Hillary Clinton's emails being stuck on a private server all of the crocodile tears about how hard it was going to be, how easy it was going to be to download, you know, secret information by hacking into the private server, turned out not to be the case. These idiots walked in with phones, with cell phones, So anyway,
And then I sent you because I saw a tweet that was like, "Oh, look, now they're trying to like backtrack because these idiots realize like, oh, I just broke 7,000 rules and laws," and so a few of them, and I really want to get your opinion on whether this is matters. There's real a few of them like after this like tweet storm where they're like, "We just barged in." They put like, oh, tweet sent by staff.
Tweet sent
of the
by
skiff.
Staff,
like
yeah.
Like, that wasn't me. It was the staff outside of the skiff. Definitely, they stayed right on the border.
Yeah, the good shaggy it wasn't me defense. Like, I love that. Here's the law Matt Gaetz broke, okay? And it is obstruction of justice. It's really, really straightforward. Hmm. 18 U.S.C. 1505, whoever corruptly or by threats or force, right? And there's arguably force. There certainly is corrupt intent, right? Influences, instructs, or impedes, or endeavors to influence, instruct, or impede the due and proper administration of the law under, or the due and proper exercise of the power of inquiry under which any inquiry or investigation is being had by any committee of either house shall be fined and imprisoned not more than 5 years. They barged into a deposition, delayed a legitimate deposition by 5 hours. You want to go through the rest and you know, we could apply the same illicit access to confidential information and go through all of the analysis we did on Hillary Clinton's emails, which was episode 13. We could do that, but it doesn't matter. Even without the skiff, even without the possibility, I would say maybe even the likelihood that some top secret information has been compromised as a result of these clown horns, you wouldn't need that. You have a straightforward violation of the law that occurred when they broke into a deposition and created a circus. And yeah, like the fact that the deposition eventually went forward, you know, don't take legal advice from a podcast or anything, but, something you really don't want to try and do is, you know, show up, prevent Congress from doing its job for 5 hours, and then use the excuse of, well, you know, eventually you did that, right? Like that is not going to keep Thomas Smith out of federal prison. it will probably keep Matt Gaetz out of federal prison. Because again, you know,
yeah, let's transition to the part where nothing matters and justice doesn't actually happen to these people. How do we,
So the statute of limitations on this crime is 3 years. I do not believe Bill Barr will be attorney general in 3 years, right? Right now, it's a federal crime. It would have to be investigated and prosecuted by the Department of Justice. If
we have
your,
a cool system where they can just not, if they're not, they don't feel like
it. And look, that is what will happen, right? There is zero chance the Department of Justice, there will be, this is a case where, you know, your sternly worded letter is the correct kind of scoffing. This is a case where there will be sternly worded letters sent to Bill Barr demanding that the Department of Justice investigate these tactics. And Bill Barr, dishonest, corrupt hack, will say, well, you know, the whole system is corrupt. You know, you're out of order, right? Like he's going to make up some nonsense. It will not get investigated. Donald Trump will not be in power forever. And I don't believe he will be president in 2 years. And those crimes will still be live. So there you go. Clear criminal violation. Nothing will happen because our Department of Justice has been hijacked by the most corrupt attorney general in American history. This is why he and Donald Trump need to be impeached and removed from office.
Yeah, it's just one more thing we have to remember. Everybody put it on their list, okay? We all need to remember all the things we have to do, like a giant checklist once Trump is no longer in office.
Yep.
And frankly, it's too much. Like, there's just no way we're going to remember it all. But this is one of those things. Okay.
This is one of those things.
Okay, well, we're going to hear about Taylor's testimony after this break. Opening Arguments is brought to you by Policy Genius. Folks, it's Halloween. It's time for all the scary stuff. It's time for the spiders and the cobwebs and the jack-o'-lanterns. I'm looking forward to carving pumpkins with a certain Phoebe Smith. I think she's old enough to get a kick out of it. But if you've got a family like I do, you might be dealing with something a little scarier right now, which is shopping for life insurance. If the idea of looking for life insurance intimidates you, try policygenius.com. Policy Genius is the easy way to shop for life insurance online. In minutes, you can compare quotes from top insurers to find your best price. Once you apply, the Policy Genius team will handle all the paperwork and the red tape. And Policy Genius doesn't just make life insurance easy. They can also help you find the right home insurance, auto insurance, and disability insurance. This October, take the scariness out of buying life insurance with Policy Genius. Go to policygenius.com, get quotes, and apply in minutes. You can do the whole thing on your phone right now. Policy Genius, the easy way to compare and buy life insurance.
I never said there was no collusion between the campaign or between people in the campaign.
Yes, you
have. I have not. I said
you...
the President of the United States. There is not a single bit of evidence the President of the United States committed the only crime you could commit here, conspired with the Russians to hack the DNC.
Andrew, this was pretty huge. I've a lot of people talking about this testimony. I think we just have access to the opening statement somehow, right?
Yes.
But I don't think we have at all. Okay.
Yeah, that is
now,
correct.
Now, here's a question. You know, I obviously get to what you're going to get to, but also, do you think it's the intention, and this I could ask this earlier, but do you think the way this is going to work is get all this testimony in, you know, behind skiffs, closed skiffs and all that, and then get your ducks in a row and then do it again, but publicly? Is that how it's going to be? Or is it just going to be confidential and then they'll do an impeachment vote? What do you think they're going to do there?
Oh, I think That's an excellent, excellent question, and I think it's going to be the former, right? If you're making an analogy, and I am, I would say that what the three congressional committees are doing is sort of akin to taking depositions in a civil case, right? This is the fishing part of the expedition, right? And again, Republicans are going to seize on that and be like, oh, this is a fishing expedition. This is a witch hunt. That's what you do when you're figuring out your case, right? And
yeah, hypothetically, you should want that, because what if, hypothetically, there was nothing here, which is not the case, but let's pretend there was nothing here. Well, then all you've done is held secret, top skiff, secret testimony. And then you're like, oh, well, it turns out Trump's actually a great guy. Nothing wrong. So we'll just not have the impeachment vote. And then you haven't publicly, you know, called into question his reputation and all that, right? Isn't that part of the reason they're doing it this way?
I could not have said that better myself, so I will not try. Yeah, no, look, that's it. Look, it is, and I'm going to make a liar out of myself as I'm about to restate that in more words.
Go ahead. Put it into smart Andrewese.
No, that's 100% correct. That's the whole point of the process, right? That's why, as we retweeted back out, impeachment is due process, right?
And it's so, like, if I was being investigated for, like, you know, I don't doing something just totally weird, like streaking or something, and then the investigators are like quietly, secretly asking my neighbors, like, hey, did you see, was Thomas just running around streaking? As we've heard, and I'm like, whoa, where's my due process? Can you announce this to everybody? Tell everybody the accusations and do these interviews with my neighbors publicly, please, so I can have some due process.
And then turns out false. But you know, you never live down, right? Yeah. Everybody thinks of you as Thomas Smith. Oh yeah. From the waist down, Thomas Smith.
Streaker.
Right? So, yeah. All right. So that's all correct. And that is what is going to happen, right? So the Democrats, again, in full view and with knowledge and participation by Republicans on these committees, are conducting what are essentially depositions. They are figuring out the testimony that is there. And then when they have either direct evidence in a way that is easily explainable to the American public of what specific crimes for which Donald Trump needs to be impeached, then they will bring back the key witnesses to deliver that testimony as succinctly as possible. Remember, by the way, in the Clinton impeachment, there were only three witnesses who testified. Those witnesses testified via closed circuit television, right? And were not cross-examined live. So I'm sure we'll talk about that if and when there is an actual impeachment vote and impeachment hearing. It's important to remember that the presentation was one-sided in our most recent impeachment in American history. Now.
Yeah, and also another tidbit in the Nixon hearings, I heard that, remember the famous one where the guy like reveals like, oh, he might have this taping system. That took place twice. That was,
yeah,
he revealed that in a secure, you know, like a secret hearing, and then did it publicly again. So I guess that's the way to go.
Exactly right. So what do we know with respect to Taylor? Let's talk about the legal issue to which he can speak up front and then kind of unpack what we know about his testimony working backwards from that. You've seen that the characterization of Taylor's testimony is, was there a quid pro quo, right? And again, this is where the latest kind of round of defense is going to be with respect to Trump's conduct is no quid pro quo, no quid pro quo. The president said it wasn't a quid pro quo, so it's not. That's not the way it works. And you may be surprised to know that the statute does not use the phrase quid pro quo. This is again, we've talked about this in previous episodes. This is 18 U.S.C. 201. It's the bribery statute, right? It says whoever, and this is subsection B2 that applies to Trump. It is super straightforward. It says whoever, being a public official, directly or indirectly, corruptly demands, seeks, receives, accepts, or agrees to do any of those things, anything of value, personally, or for any other person or entity, in return for being influenced in the performance of any official act, is guilty of bribery. So, the quid pro quo is, did you seek, receive, accept, or agree to receive or accept anything of value? That's all the test is. And so I think that what's being done here by the Republicans, and I just want to make sure that our listeners are out in front of this, is similar to the effort to control the narrative by saying no collusion, right?
Yeah, because, exactly. Yeah, I was going to say that exact same thing. Collusion all over again.
Yeah. Quid pro quo, right? Latin, this for that. We've already seen the first wave of dishonest hacks, right? Like, look, when Matt Gaetz breaks into the skiff, he's just a moron. And that's easy to say, like, okay, well, he's just an idiot doing idiotic things. When Ted Cruz says a quid pro quo needs to be an explicit agreement to do X in exchange for Y, Ted Cruz is lying, right? Ted Cruz knows what the bribery statute requires. And you can damn well bet that if it were Hillary Clinton, Ted Cruz would be out there very publicly saying, look, quid pro quo is a shorthand for what the statute requires. What it explicitly says is it requires you to get or ask for anything of value in exchange for you doing or being influenced in the doing of anything that's part of your job, right? That's what it comes down to. And, you know, and we've talked about how the Bob McDonnell case before the Supreme Court made it very, very difficult to prove many kinds of bribery. That's because the hard part is proving being influenced in the performance of an official act. That's the easy part here. So yeah. you do not need, right? And again, I mean, this is sort of the bottom line. You do not need to show, right, an agreement, right? I'm thinking of the Beavis and Butthead movie, right? Where the police officer is having the wire on Beavis for, like, that we need you to say, like, I want to offer you money in exchange for sex. Otherwise, it doesn't count, right? And you do not need a secret recording of Donald Trump going, I need you to do this in exchange for this, right? That's not what the law requires.
But what's weird is we have a phone call.
We do. Thanks for stealing my punchline. We happen to have that, but we wouldn't need it. Okay, so... Can I ask you this
on that topic, though? Mm-hmm. I have seen, you know, some talk about, would it be okay? So I guess a couple layers to the question. Would it matter if somehow, and this has been another one of the Republican defenses, would it matter if he was only offering the White House visit versus the military aid? Like, is there a distinction there? And if there is it one that's actually legally relevant, or is it just like an image distinction? Like, it's going to be easier to say, well, it's just a White House visit. Like, come on, this isn't really, you know, that big of a quid, I guess, or a pro quo, one or the other.
Yeah. So let me answer the question first. There would be, in my view, a distinction in bringing the bribery charge that I just described if the only part of the quid pro quo was the White House visit, because that would then potentially run afoul of the performance of the official act part of this, right? Because the McDonnell case makes it clear that just access, that just kind of generically being a scumbag. And remember, like, I mean, McDonald was one of the worst, like most cartoon level supervillains in terms of being a scumbag that you can imagine, right? Like this, you know, his wife got fur coats and he got driven around in a Ferrari and he brought in like con artists in, you know, and gave them entree into the Virginia legislature and gave them obvious input and thumb on the scale to Republicans in the Virginia legislature of, hey, if you want to curry favor with the governor, you got to do what, you know, these guys want. And the way those guys got access was by directly giving Bob McDonnell suitcases full of money and expensive gifts, which seems like bribery, right? Like that seems like the kind of thing for which you should go to jail. The Supreme Court ruled 9-0 that just introducing folks around is not the performance of an official act. So, so yes, that's why that argument is being advanced. I will tell you, Taylor's testimony, in my view, the really damaging aspect of Taylor's testimony is not connecting up the actual official act part, right? We've already seen the potential for Ambassador Sondland to sort of walk back the question of, well, you know, I didn't say that it was definitely going to be, we were definitely going to withhold the aid. All I said was, you know, and there were various kind of pretextual alternative statements, you might say. Where I think Taylor's testimony was likely useful, again, extrapolating from his statement, is much more in terms of setting the picture of demonstrating the corrupt intent. And here's why. Let's start with the, is there the performance or influence in the performance of an official act? I actually think if Republicans are going to try and make that argument, that is a loser of an argument, because the law is super duper clear that that the president did not follow official protocols in terms of directing Office of Management and Budget to withhold release of congressionally authorized aid to Ukraine. That law is 31 USC section 1512. This is part of the Congressional Budget and Impound Control Act. There's a related provision to USC section 683 that does allow the president to withhold some or all of certain funds. But that law requires you to make certain procedural findings first, right? So section 683 subsection A says, whenever the president determines that all or part of any budget authority will not be required to carry out the full objectives or scope of programs for which it is provided, then the president shall transmit to both houses of Congress a special message specifying, and then there are five things, right? The amount that he proposes to rescind, the account, department, or establishment of the government to which such budget authority is available, the reasons why it should be rescinded, to the maximum extent practicable, the estimated fiscal, economic, and budgetary effect of the proposed rescission, and all the facts and circumstances around that determination. And then subsection B says, any amount proposed to be rescinded in such special message shall be made available for obligation by the executive agency unless within 45 days, Congress passes a rescission bill rescinding all or part of the amount proposed to be rescinded. Now, let me unpack that a little bit. I know that was a lot of legalese all at once. What this means is Office of Management and Budget cannot set policy. They can't say, there's a transition in Ukraine. We're not sure whether our money is going to be. When Congress directs funds to be spent, the executive agency cannot say, yeah, well, you know, yeah, Congress, what do they know, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, Congress has the power of the purse. That was that first statute I read or cited but did not read to you because it's super long and boring. 31 USC 1512 says, you got to spend the money that Congress tells you to spend. You are prohibited from setting agency policy. The exception
should be an actual literal United States purse that they carry when they have
I agree with stuff. That.
I have the power of the purse.
Yeah.
Here, let me get I got a bunch of gum in here stuff.
You got to put it on the conveyor belt when you go through security.
Yeah. Hold on. Yeah. I'll pay. Hold on. I'm going to pay these congressional bills. One second. Hold on. Just dig through my purse here.
And so the importance of these two statutes is that even if you want to make a Bill Barr defense, right? Even if you want to say, well, when the president does it, it's not illegal. That's not true because that's not true here because the president didn't do the thing that the law requires him to do, right? He did not make a determination that there was any reason to rescind or hold up the Ukraine funds. He did not send a special notice to Congress. He did not outline his reason. None of that happened. So nobody is talking about 2 USC 683 yet. But
yeah, they're all talking about 3 USC 870.
No, but look, in legal circles, that is the next item up to be discussed because while Republican sycophants are sort of crafting the, oh, well, you know, the president gets to just sort of do what he wants with that isn't true. Right. And the president could have legally followed the procedures and moved to rescind part of the aid to Ukraine. But he has to do it in public. He has to transmit what's called a, quote, special message to the Congress. And it has to comply with the five subcomponents of the law that I talked about. And he didn't do any of that. So at the end of the day, I don't think the official act is going to be the problem. And when you look at Taylor and you look at his testimony, again, from his opening statement, to me, what jumped out was the fact that from the beginning, Taylor is going to testify that the United States was running a shadow operation in Ukraine. The four people he names are Special Envoy Kurt Volker, EU Ambassador Gordon Sondland, Rick, I can't count to three, Perry, and Rudy Giuliani. That, again, trying to predict what plays with the American public is a challenge. It's been a challenge for the past 3 years. I think it's not hard to understand that the president took his personal attorney and the dumbest guy in his cabinet and was undermining the appropriate channels for conducting diplomacy in Ukraine.
Can I ask a clarifying question?
Yes.
Are you saying that is this another law he violated, or are you using this to say as proof that he violated the, you know, bribery law? Like,
yes,
this is another.
It's the latter. That's it's the proof of the corrupt intent, right?
Because so
remember,
another crime. It's just
no. Yeah. It is all part of the bribery. But remember, when we went through Volume 2 of the Mueller report, that part of the difficulty in prosecuting these sorts of crimes is how do you demonstrate corrupt intent? And we saw from Mueller, right, from career prosecutors, one of the ways that you demonstrate corrupt intent is by showing that people who were doing things that might have been lawful did them covertly, changed the rules, had odd, weird process, right? Like, all of that are the kinds of things that in ordinary cases, right, in garden variety criminal cases, go to the jury to say, well, you know, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, you can use your own judgment to determine after this particular phone call, all of the records were locked down, stored in a secret server, and all copies were deleted. whether that's evidence of corrupt intent or not. Now, maybe it just so happened that the really bad, damaging phone call, they also failed to file. But, you know, if you're a juror and you're not an idiot, we allow you to use your own judgment. I mentioned the phone call not just because that is the one piece of information we have from the whistleblower complaint, but also because Taylor testified as to that July 25th phone call. He said, "I was chief of mission to Ukraine," and he received no readout, right? A summarized transcript of that phone call that violated normal protocols. And he said that he found it odd. He then said the Ukrainian government issued a, quote, short cryptic summary of the call. And so Taylor went and spoke with a National Security Council official about the call, who said, quote, "It could have been better," end of quote. I like that one. And told him that Trump wanted Zelensky to meet with Giuliani or Bill Barr. Taylor never got a summary. The details of his testimony of his opening statement are publicly available. So we don't need to continue to read it. But I will tell you that in my view, this is the testimony for which I think Taylor will be called upon in the event that there is a formal impeachment investigation and that Taylor is a witness. It will be, hey, look, I'm the guy in Ukraine. And by the way, Taylor specifically took the position in June of 2019, right? He was in the public sector. He was at the United States Institute of Peace. He was the executive vice president. He was brought in to run the United States foreign policy with Ukraine in June of 2019, and he had a lengthy sit down with Mike Pompeo and said, "I will take this job assuming that the United States does not change its policy with respect to Ukraine since 1991, since Ukrainian independence, that we support Ukraine as against the Russians." And Pompeo, quote, assured Taylor that the U.S. still supported Ukraine, end quote. Last kind of point on that. So here's the guy, very sober diplomat. Will he be tarred as a Democrat? Probably, right? In the alternative universe in which, you know, lifelong Republican Robert Mueller is a Democrat, you will be able to say that Bill Taylor is a Democrat. He was legislative assistant for Senator Bill Bradley in New Jersey. He was appointed special coordinator for Middle East transitions in 2009 by Barack Obama. But that doesn't really serve, you know, it doesn't really survive any kind of rational scrutiny, right? He was made U.S. ambassador to Ukraine in 2006 under George W. Bush. He is a West Point graduate. You know, he's a military guy. This is not somebody who is, working for the Bernie Sanders campaign, right? He's just a career diplomat. I mean, you know, I could add a little bit more about his bio. He's got a master's in public policy from the only school that matters. He was, you know, top 1% in his class. But I mean, you know, this is a military guy, served in the infantry in Vietnam, earned a Bronze Star and Air Medal 5 for heroism. I don't even know what that is.
Hair Metal 5?
Yeah. I know what that is.
I've only ever seen Hair Metal 2 or 3. I've never seen that level of hair metal.
Yeah, that's
incredible.
It's for the mashup of Wasp and Striper. It's pretty amazing.
Opening Arguments is brought to you by Mack Weldon. Mack Weldon believes in smart design, premium fabrics, and simple shopping. And I'll tell you, I need that when it comes to clothes shopping. I need all the help that I can get. I have long been clueless about this, but Mack Weldon is here to help. They will be the most comfortable underwear, socks, shirt, undershirts, hoodies, and sweatpants that you will ever. They have a line of silver underwear and shirts that are naturally antimicrobial, which means they eliminate odor. Look, I don't mean to imply anything untoward about you folks, but we could all use a little help with the microbes. They want you to be comfortable, so if you don't like your first pair of underwear, you can keep it, and they will still refund you, no questions asked. Not only does Mack Weldon underwear, socks, and shirts look good, they perform well, too. It's good for working out, going to work, going out on dates, or just everyday life. I love my Mack Weldon clothing. It's comfortable. It's sleek. It's everything you would want. I have the underwear. I have a nice shirt or two. I think I have a sweatshirt as well. Good stuff. It won't disappoint you. It looks good. It's a very easy process to buy the clothing you like. It's right on the website. You're able to see what it's going to look like, and it doesn't disappoint. Hey, for 20% off your first order, visit MackWeldon.com and enter promo code LAWPOD. One word, promo code LAWPOD. 20% off is a great deal. Go to MackWeldon.com, enter that promo code LAWPOD, and grab yourself or a loved one some nice, sleek, comfortable new clothing. Go do it.
No, look, like, he's a guy, right? So he was appointed ambassador to Ukraine in 2006. That Obama appointment as special coordinator for Middle East transitions was designed to get him out of the role of ambassador to Ukraine and install somebody else who was, you know, sort of more favorable to Obama in 2009. And again, right, he left government service in 2014 in the middle of the Obama administration and was brought back by Mike Pompeo. So, you know, not a crazy leftist, but, you know, the race to discredit
anyone
him is
who doesn't. Yeah. Unquestionably support Trump and everything he does and praise him as a genius becomes a Democrat. It's just pointless. Yep. There's no logic to it.
There is not. So lots more. I mean, this his statement is disturbing. And it is somebody who, when you read it and you know the background, this is somebody who cares very deeply about the United States' geostrategic interests, is very skeptical of Russia, has the 2012 Mitt Romney Republican Party platform position that views Russia as the greatest threat to the United States, and wanted to be involved in Ukraine to support Ukraine as a bulwark against Russian interests. That's why he was there. That's why he agreed to go back. And he went back and discovered things that he found disturbing. The president's personal lawyer and Rick Perry running shadow foreign policy ops and holding the government of Ukraine hostage over political favors. And it bothered him. And that's why he's testifying. So that's where all of this fits in to the impeachment investigation, his testimony, from what we can tell, relevant to those elements of the bribery statute. And there you go. That's your medium dive yodel.
Yeah. Everything I've seen makes this testimony sound like it's the end and very serious. Is that your impression? And then does the fact that you've got these clowns marching under the skiff affect how you view Republicans' reaction to this? Or is it just that's a group of people that's so diehard anyway that we're never going to get them, even if there's enough Republican support to actually convict Trump? What do you think?
Yeah, wow. I don't know how to answer that, right? Like my gut feeling is this feels like desperation, right? It feels like, okay, this is bad, but you know what? Like we could see the desperation, right? Like desperation has worked inexplicably for this president already, right? Like we called it out. We went through the crime that Bill Barr committed in releasing his quote summary of the Mueller report, right? That was, and I'm using crime in scare quotes. It's not perjury because it's not official testimony, but I'm sure I could find some actual crime that it was going to, but it was definitely inappropriate conduct for the attorney general. It was easily proven false. It had the kind of stench of desperation about it, and they got away with it. So, I don't know. It feels like the same thing here, right? It feels like, a kind of like, you know, holy clown horn. This is super bad. Let's throw everything at the wall and see what sticks. Oh, and by the way, that's worked out pretty great so far. So,
yeah, but maybe this is such a easier, compelling story, and you don't have to have Bob Mueller doing everything he can to prevent impeachment, but still,
yeah,
do a report.
Yeah, it will not. The decision on whether this constitutes a crime, a high crime and misdemeanor, will not be usurped by Bill Barr in this case.
Yeah.
So that I think gives us a lot more room for optimism. And I, you know, maybe there's a good way to kind of wind it down. This stems from one of the conversations that Ashley shared in the opening arguments Facebook community. I think kind of the next phase of this is when Republicans move to the line of, okay, fine, you've demonstrated that there were crimes, but like, why should I care? Right. And that's a hard one for me, because you've demonstrated the president has committed a crime, but why should I care is a really hard statement to evaluate, right? but that's what we need to be thinking about in terms of how to make that salient, and how to say, you know, it's why I spent a lot of time the first episode we did on Ukraine in talking about the actual situation on the ground there. And I wonder if that isn't the way to make that salient, right? Like, this is a United States ally that is the subject of a 5-year war that, by the way, is happening because of the bipartisan work we did getting a pro-Russian stooge elected president of Ukraine, and since then has 12% of its territory occupied by Russian troops, who, by the way, have shot and killed tens of thousands of Ukrainians. And the idea, right, look, the idea that Trump is holding foreign policy hostage for his personal ends should be enough. But this is even worse than that, right? Like, this is not, oh, you know, we didn't send an appropriate aid package to, you know, France. This is a country that desperately, that where people are being killed, where its territory is being occupied by the actual Russian army, and you have Trump going like, well, we'd love to help you out, but first, you know, you got to manufacture evidence about a debunked conspiracy theory from QAnon about the 2016 election. Like, are you kidding me? Sorry, I'm on the soapbox again, but...
All right, it's time to thank our new patrons, our first-timers, over on patreon.com/law, enjoying all the goodies. A lot of awful movies. That came out pretty recently. That's a good one. Check it out. And the bonus episodes, all the good stuff. And I think it's your turn first, Andrew.
All right, and yeah, I should be dropping yet another bonus patron episode, this one featuring my son, who just turned 17, so a little more thoughts on debate, and people seem to like the last one, so lots of cool stuff out there. Anyway, people who will get to enjoy that include Andrew Bushnell, Sam Cohn, Brian, Jay Gumbos, Lex, Mark, Impeachment Finally Swayed Me, well, good, Babblefish, David Burgess, Nicholas McCausland, JP Actual, Sharpie Weather Forecaster, Matthew Petrus, Roberto Kingsley, Para Lawser, Nick Lewis, Michael A. Jackson. Boy, I sure hope so. Oh, no, I was thinking of Michael A. Jordan, right? Sorry. Michael A. Jackson, thank you for supporting us. Let's take the DeLorean back to 2015 and fix this timeline. I'm with you. Peter Coyne, Patrick Crowley, Rebecca Gomez, the dreaded Rear Admiral, Ryan Trexler, Riri, James St. James, a string of unconstitutional laws. Nice. Way to jump right in there, new patron. Lance Maxey, paying to cut the name shout-outs. Well, you can do that. Z-Postate, Matt Becker. Helga, I think is Guvman's daughter. My apologies if I've mangled that. Craig Mindell, Cody Marker. Subscribe to conduitcoffee.com to keep up with OA. Ooh. Michael Potter, House Myth. The Brownish Bomber, Dan Engman, The Murder Family, Kenneth Fryer Ludwig, Benjamin, Martin Lawson, Martin Larson, Coconut Knigget, nice Monty Python reference there, Katie Ellison, Robert Edwards, Be More F, Clown Hornet, we'll do it live. Great. One vote for a Dallas live show. Well, yeah, one. Stephen Tornow, Brian Gates, or Getz, James Powers, Tainted Dingo Love. I'm hoping that's a Soft Cell Australia mashup. So, Just Ash. It says, I'm not going to say this Patton's name out loud, but I think it's supposed to be. I'm not going to say this Patreon's name out loud. But either way, that's what it says. Ken Veda, Dick Lund, Kevin Weatherwalks, J.C. Sander, Drew Hickox. The arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice. I do agree with that. Justin Allred, Dan Detweiler, Jade Kohler, Jim Taggart, Phantom Foreskin, Liberty and Duct Tape for All, Chocolate Tort Ice Cream Cohen, Stan Luna, Dan Gartner, The Witness. Y'all finally convinced me to spend money on yodeling. Well, I'm glad we did. Hope you're enjoying it. Brian Miola, Vote Blue, No Matter Who. Thank you, sir. Mike Baer, Sean Clifton, Andrew Hoverson. Take it away, Thomas.
All right, Adrian Husson, Nick Gugliardo, Joe Gibbs, Clownhorn and Clownhorns, Justin Jiju, Drucci, Justin B, Adam Haynes, Victor Aranda, another Elizabeth Warren supporter. Yay, me too. Soren Hogland, Maxwell Stolf, The Multiverse is Collapsing, Will France, Michael Maloney, Michael J. McFall.com, Entry Level Data Analysts in Atlanta. Cool. Nirmal Mehta, Untold Aspect, Chillscape, Jen Keel, Laura McMartin, Annette, Canadian for Impeachment, Olivia Ralph, Catherine Connell, Eugene Valinsky, Marla Kirby, Gordon Leong, Mark Kritzman, Eric, Seth Hoare, Jenna Lynn, Katie Rainey, Andrea C. Albergo, Hugo. I don't know. Hugus Ross, Brian Hart, A Symphony of Whistleblowers, Tyler Fay, Phantasmagorical, Yaffa Miners, Greg Piper, Janine, Abortion is Invoking My Third Amendment Right Not to Quarter a Future Soldier, Dave White, Joel Stobert, White House Whistles LLC, Jim McGarva, Charlie Lathwell, Sarah, What's Worse Than a Worm in an Apple? That's pretty off color. I'm not going to read whatever that is. Mark Kovaleski, Robert Bingham, Bridget Stamp, Jolly Roger 83, Carl Fisher, Gerald Tort, Elin, Mitchell Klomp, Supporting PP Living in Andrew's Basement, Donna Cray, Brent Lean, Julian Ayala, VJ Iyer, Michael Marenko, Zach Sylvia, Learning to Play the Clown Horn This Year, Adam Kahn, Leonard Still Wants a Jet, Steve Boyer, Melissa Keene, Justin Brower, Osmium, Renata Strauss, and Andrew Burns, and with that, we will be caught up next week. We didn't quite make it.
Woo!
We'll finally be caught up. Thanks to all the new patron love. You guys are the best. I hope you're enjoying all the goodies. And now it's time for Thomas Totally Nails the Bar Exam. T3VE.
Oh, no associate of this firm has ever failed the bar exam.
Talk to the hand. I need your clothes. That's one of my mission parameters. Trust me. I know now why you cry.
I love that level of confidence. All right. Thomas. Yeah, you're on a pretty good winning streak right now. So let's hope that continues. Thomas, an innkeeper who had no previous experience in the motel or commercial laundry business and who knew nothing about the trade usages of either business, bought a motel and signed an agreement with a laundry company for the motel's laundry services. The agreement was for a term of 1 year and provided for, quote, daily service at $500 a week, end of quote. From their conversations during negotiation, the laundry company owner knew that the innkeeper expected laundry services 7 days a week. When the laundry company refused to pick up the motel's laundry on two successive Sundays and indicated that it would never do so, the innkeeper canceled the agreement. The laundry company sued the innkeeper for breach of contract. At trial, clear evidence was introduced to show that in the commercial laundry business, daily service did not include service on Sundays. So,
interesting.
Is the laundry company likely to succeed in its action for breach of contract? A, no, because the laundry company knew the meaning the innkeeper attached to daily service, and therefore the innkeeper's meaning will control. B, no, because the parties attached materially different meanings to daily service, and therefore no contract was formed. C, yes, because the parole evidence rule will not permit the innkeeper to prove the meaning he attached to daily service. Or D, yes, because the trade usage will control the interpretation of daily service.
So this is very interesting. So it seems very clear that these two people who formed the contract had different ideas of daily service. And it does add in, from their conversations during negotiation, the laundry company owner knew that the innkeeper expected laundry services 7 days a week. So, you know, this is one of those, like, if I'm trying to just be a rational guy, you know, answering what I think the law should be, I think it's pretty skeezy to form a contract when you know that the guy, the other person, has a different idea, and then you're negotiating price based on that, I'm sure, and then you're not going to do the laundry service on Sundays. So seems like I would want it to be a no action, as in no, the laundry company isn't likely to succeed. But I don't know. Let's see. Okay, I'll go through these answers one more time. And let's see. At trial, clear evidence was introduced to show that in commercial laundry business, daily service did not include service on Sundays. So that's like, you know, the norm is that. But at the same time, it's a contract between two people. I don't know. So we'll see. So A, no, because the laundry company knew the meaning the innkeeper attached to daily service, and therefore the innkeeper's meaning will control. That's plausible. That's a plausible answer. B, no, because the parties attached materially different meanings to daily service, and therefore no contract was formed. I kind of like this answer. I like it better as a no answer than A. Because it makes sense as a principle that, like, if you happen to write a contract that has a phrase in it or a word or a term, and you genuinely have different meanings attached to it, I think it makes sense to say, like, well, then you didn't really have an agreement. So just on a theoretical level, I like B. C, yes, because the parole evidence rule will not permit the innkeeper to prove the meaning he attached to daily service. I don't like that one. I mean, it's using parole evidence rule. That's something we know applies to contracts. But I don't really, it doesn't fully make sense to me. Parole evidence to prove. I don't really think that's what the parole evidence rule does. Like, not permit someone to prove the meaning they attach to daily service. And also the facts stipulate that, like, they both were aware that this is what the guy meant. I don't know. I don't like C. Not in love with that one. D, yes, because the trade usage will control the interpretation of daily service. Now, that's the best yes answer. So I think, as much as I'm leaning toward a no answer, I think I can eliminate, I personally would eliminate A and C. Who knows if I'm right in that, but that's what I would do. I think it would be between B and D if I were to pick a no and a yes answer. So B, no, because the parties attached materially different meanings. I really like that one. I could see it being D, which is just, look, when you write a contract when you're in this business, look, when you're in the laundry business, we all know what daily service means. And, you know, that's plausible that could just control the interpretation. So it's toughy. I don't know. This is a coin flip question, as most of them are for me. It's right around 50% success or 55. But I think that there's enough in here to make me want to say B, that the parties attach materially different meanings. It's interesting that in that answer, it doesn't sound like it matters whether or not the laundry guy even knew. Like, it sounds like from that answer, then that fact wouldn't matter. Because it says the laundry company owner knew that the innkeeper expected laundry services 7 days a week. It's interesting that the only answer that includes that fact would be A, because the laundry company knew the meaning the innkeeper attached to daily service, and therefore the innkeeper's meaning will control. I like the first part of that. Like, I like that it's like the laundry keeper, this is answer A again, the laundry keeper knew the meaning, but I don't like the second part, like just because the laundry company guy knew it, that therefore the innkeeper's meaning will control. Like, that doesn't seem fair. I could see some answer that was like, well, yeah, because they knew and he knowingly was trying to like get the contract amount under a different meaning. But I don't think that's why I don't like A. Like, it doesn't really, the second clause there doesn't really follow in my mind. So anyway, I'm going to go with, oh, it's tough, but I'm going to go with B. I think D is a strong answer, but I'm going to go with B and hope that things, we live in a just society, and this poor innkeeper who doesn't know how things work can be bailed out here because they had materially different meanings for daily service. Final answer.
All right. And if you'd like to play along with Thomas, you know how to do that. Just share out this episode on social media. Include the hashtag T3BE. Include your answer, your reasons, therefore, and we will pick a person as a winner and shower that person with never-ending fame and fortune. Fame and fortune not guaranteed.
All right, let's hope the improbable streak continues. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Thanks most of all to our patrons for making the show happen. We hope you enjoy all the bonus stuff. And thanks to Andrew for Andrewing us, as usual, even while he's sipping Prosecco in amazing locations that we all wish we were experiencing with him.
But I wish you were here with me too, Thomas. So
he at least descended from his vacation to give us a great episode. Thanks, Andrew. We'll see everybody next time.
You betray the law! Law!
This has been Opening Arguments with Andrew and Thomas. If you love the show and want to support future episodes, please visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/law. If you can't support us financially, it'd be a big help if you could leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, Stitcher, or whatever podcast delivery vehicle you use. And be sure to tell all your friends about us. For questions, suggestions, and complaints, email us at openarguments@gmail.com. The show notes and links are on our website at www.openargs.com. Be sure to like our page on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @openargs. Until next time. This podcast is a production of Opening Arguments Media, LLC. All rights reserved.
Opening Arguments is a copyrighted production of Opening Arguments Media, LLC. All rights reserved. Opening Arguments is produced with the assistance of our editor, Brian Ziegenhagen, our transcriptionist, Heather Leverage, production assistant, Ashley Smith, and with the generous assistance of our volunteer unofficial researcher, Deborah Smith. Special thanks to Teresa Gomez, who runs our merch and our live shows and also heads up the OA Wiki project. Follow them at OA Wiki. And a big thank you to our Facebook group moderators, Emily Waters, Alicia Cook, Eric Brewer, Natalie Newell, Brian, and Teresa. Check out the Opening Arguments community on Facebook. And finally, thanks to Thomas Smith for creating the fabulous OA theme song, which is used with permission.